You're listening to the Emotional Abuse Recovery Podcast, episode number 40. Today on the podcast, I'm interviewing a mother and a daughter who have both been the victims of narcissistic abuse. And I thought it would be really great to allow them to share their story, because a lot of times we tend to focus on only the parent in the situation when the children are also being affected in ways that we may or may not even understand. So if you have children, if you have grown children, this would be a really great opportunity for you to listen in to see how this can affect yourself as well as your kids. Welcome to the Emotional Abuse Recovery Podcast, a podcast specifically designed to help you heal after a toxic or narcissistic relationship. This podcast teaches you to use your subconscious mind to go from feeling stuck to set free. In here, you will learn how to use the power of your own mind to free yourself from emotional pain, move forward with confidence, and experience the inner peace you deserve in your healing journey after emotional abuse. I'm your host and subconscious reprogramming coach, Allison Dagny. So let's get started. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining me today on the Emotional Abuse Recovery Podcast. I am your host, Allison Dagny. And today I have two important guests that I want to introduce you to. I have a mother and a daughter. I'm going to keep their names confidential to protect the innocent. But the reason I have them here is because I think it's really important that we show it little bit different perspective. And the purpose of this is to show it from the perspective of a child. And this is a grown child. This is an adult child. However, she experienced what it's like living in an emotionally abusive, in a domestic abusive situation. So the purpose here is always to help, to give as much information as we can. And if somebody can walk away with some tips or tricks or help or ideas or anything information-wise that we can help them with, that's the goal. So again, I'm going to keep identities confidential. I'm going to refer to mom as mom and daughter as daughter, but I would love for you guys to go ahead and introduce yourselves. Tell us a little bit about who you are. Mom, you can go first. And if you want to introduce your daughter, you can do that or hand it over to her.
Okay. Hi, thank you for having us today, first of all. I'm 47. I live in England, in the UK. And a year ago, almost to the day, my daughters and I were able to escape an abusive relationship with my ex-partner, which was characterized by psychological and financial abuse, was really the main crux. Given that we're going to be focusing on that, so I'll keep this bit to the good stuff, which is, you know, a year on, I'm, you know, really happy and making progress every day, really. But I've got two daughters, so my older daughter is with me just now. My younger one is she's 17, but she's not with us at the moment. But yeah, so just hand over to my older daughter.
Hello, I'm 20. I'm a student. I don't live at home most of the time because I'm studying, but I'm very close with my mum, and life is a lot better at the moment than it has been in the past.
Good. I'm so glad to hear that. And I'm so glad that you guys have offered to be here and agreed to share your stories. This is a really sensitive topic, obviously, but a lot of times we get so focused on the victim being the one that's in the relationship, right? The mom, the girlfriend, the wife. We get, if the abuse is in that regard, the female being the victim. And the problem that, like, that's great. You know, I focus on that a lot too, and we need to heal from that. But the thing that gets lost a lot is that the children, right, are being affected by this. And my children, I have three children of my own. They've been affected. That my oldest is 16. My youngest is 12. But I really felt strongly that this is going to be something that can help people, because we need to also raise awareness about that, right? Yes, we were victimized, but these kids are also, when they're seeing the abuse, but they're also experiencing it for themselves. It might be in a different capacity and, you know, or a different level or, you know, strength or weakness or whatever, it doesn't matter. they're still experiencing it. And that is why we need to make this part of this podcast. So if you could, Mom, just give me a little bit of background on the experiences that you had with the abuser. You had two young children at the time. I know you and I have spoken a little bit about this before. So if you can just kind of briefly give me a rundown of what that was like.
So my ex is not my daughter's father. When I met him, my marriage to their father was breaking down. We were separating. The children at that point were only 2 and 5. My marriage was faltered on a lack of communication. We were not meant to be together, and we just didn't communicate. But I had kind of I left the marital home and got an apartment with the children, and within the same town. We live in a fairly small town, but 19,000 people, so it's a kind of small community. But at the time when my ex, the abuser, came into my life, I was very unanchored. My life was in flux. I had two small kids. I was self-employed at the time, so completely reliant on myself for income. And I was just starting out again. So nothing was concrete, you know, everything was up in the air. So he was able to come in presenting as my knight in shining armor, and was everything I appeared to want. And again, with hindsight, there's so much of this that now makes sense. But at the time, I was craving attention. I was craving affection. I was only 32. So, you know, I was young, and I just kind of lost who I was. I, you know, when you have young children, that can happen. But I think when it's exacerbated by the breakdown of a marriage, it's your loneliness or your feelings of loneliness are magnified. And he came in, and, you know, it was back in the days of MSN Messenger. So we would spend hours into the wee small hours, you know, messaging back and forth. And he would always pitch it as, let's have another fun quiz. And he would literally be so wanting to know me and ask me questions about everything, from pizza topping favorites to my things that scared me, to my childhood, to my relationship with my parents. And I'd never had someone show so much interest in me in such a long time. And I basically, again, I can see with hindsight now, I gave him the manual of me. You know, that this is everything you need to know about what scares me, what my fears are, what my insecurities are. And ultimately, he would come back and use that against me. But, you know, I have to say, within sort of the first few weeks of knowing him romantically, it was twin flames, you know, all that, those kind of terms where, you know, he's talking about, you know, love was starting to enter the conversation, and everything moved extremely quickly, you know. But I was absolutely taken by him. You know, he just left the military, which I'd never known anybody from that environment before. So, but very quickly, again, with hindsight, but very quickly, he was sharing stuff with me, these things with, and he told a really tragic story of his childhood of neglect and abuse and horrific things. And I should probably say at this point that in my life, I had a really lovely upbringing. My parents are fantastic. I've got all the men in my life, and to that point had been good men. So my dad's lovely, my brothers are great. And I guess I kind of always come at life with the expectation. I'd never known unkindness before. You know, I'd never known cruelty or unkindness or dishonesty. So I didn't recognize it. So when he's telling me these truly appalling things about his childhood, which I have to say now, I actually don't believe. I don't believe anything that he has told me now. But at the time, to hear of somebody that was so mistreated when I had this lovely childhood and really super family, it just made me so sad. And kind of I felt special that he wanted to sort of trust me with him and his vulnerabilities, and I absolutely adored him. I loved him, you know, very quickly. And yeah. You know, we moved in together probably about 18 months after we first got together. But my first, I mean, I again, hindsight, but I can recognize the red flags. I mean, there was about 4 months into our, I mean, 4 months into a 14-year relationship was my first indication that this is not right. He had lost the job that he'd got when he came out of the military, and he had this idea to start a business, but he needed money. Now, I had just left my marriage. I was living on my own with my children. I had no debt at that point, and he needed £15,000. So 19 $1,000, whatever, you know, just to start up this business. But because he was so animated and passionate and convincing about it all, I thought, yep, it's fail safe, it's going to work. And I, obviously, in my position, I didn't have that kind of money. And he was like, well, we can ask your parents. And I, to my massive regret, I did ask my dad. And fortunately, he said no. He obviously recognized that this is a massive red flag. And ultimately, I got a bank loan out. And that was the start of my journey into debt at his hand, really. So I took out a £15,000 bank loan. He came with me to the bank appointment. And when I could see the bank manager was kind of showing a bit of reticence, and you know, he would kind of speak for me, and there was no way he was going to leave that appointment without, you know, the certainty that we're going to get this money. And I remember the bank manager said it would take 72 hours to process, and he was calling me constantly, so, you know, is it in, and we'd never actually talked about repayments on this loan. I guess I had just assumed that he would do this, I would get the money, because he'd given a reason why he couldn't get credit. I think it was down again to the military, and me not knowing anything about anything, I kind of went with it. And then I think when the money was sort of slightly delayed in dropping in, he went from being completely adoring and attentive and loving to absolute rage. Like flip a switch rage. I remember literally where I was, you know, when it all happened. But then in the heat of all that, he was saying that it was my fault, that I can't love him like I said I would. He trusted me. He had given, you know, told me his life story, and how could I do this to him? And I hadn't done anything other than try and arrange to get his business afloat. And literally as that was kind of happening, literally I, you know, got a notification that the money was there. And there I am now, sort of £15,000 in debt with the repayments and all this. And I know that should have been the point at which I went, I'm out of here. I didn't. And I think a lot of my decisions in this have come down to the fact that I haven't been able to financially. He isolated me over the, I mean, we're cutting over 14 years here, but it was cyclical. The way when he was love bombing me, I was an absolute goddess. He couldn't get enough of me. I felt so confident and attractive and able, you know. But then he would flip a switch overnight and withdraw affection, attention, everything. And I would get smaller. And my self-confidence was intrinsically linked to his opinion of me. And he would just stop talking to me. Silent treatments was his weapon of choice. And oh boy, I mean, he would go, I think the longest I ever endured was about 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. It could start in the beginning, it would maybe be 3 or 4 days. And I always said to him, you know, at this point, the children were still very small and, you know, they need my attention. And I don't have time, quite frankly, to yeah. sort of plead and beg with him to sort of, you know, what have I done? I'm so sorry, whatever it is I've done. So I would just say to him, like, when you're ready to talk, my life is going to go on because I've got two little people who are reliant on me. When you're ready to come back into the family and engage, and, you know, then we will be here. But I am not going to either tell me what I've done, but he could never articulate what it was. And he would always, and I can see now there was nothing, you know, but he would always make it into, and well, if you don't know what you've done, that's just typical of you. You're so unaware. And, you know, that would usually be the way that he would go about things. I heard the term word salad, and mm-hmm. that was something yeah. he deployed regularly. I would think we'd be talking about one thing and it would be off on a different tangent. And I was completely discombobulated by him. He absolutely played with my head. I couldn't trust myself with anything. I started to think I had like dementia at times. Yeah. I was, you know, I remember saying to the children regularly, you know, like if you said you were going to someone's house and I would go, and you, I did tell you that, and I'd be like, okay, and I had to, you need to bear with me. I really started to think there was yeah. something wrong. Yeah. It felt like I really had early onset dementia or something. Okay. And
you know, so this is the typical, what I'm hearing is like the love bombing, right? From yeah. the very beginning, yeah. the yeah. devalue and discard, right? Yeah. Through all of the typical word salads and gaslighting and manipulation and guilt tactics and emotional abuse, psychological abuse, financial abuse, right? All mm-hmm. of that. So mm-hmm. this brings me to a question I have for your daughter. Mm-hmm. Did you see these things? Like, did you as a kid, and if you did, at what point did you recognize and notice this isn't right, or I noticed this isn't feel right? Did you notice that?
I think In hindsight, yes. But I think because it was always sort of justified as like, oh, well, he had a really horrible childhood or this kind of stuff. Like, I think I always kind of would, because even with the way that he would interact with like my friends, for example, like, and even the way that I would interact with like my friends' dads and stuff like that, like, it was never like, I always knew that he wasn't normal. Like, it just wasn't the way that a normal person should be react like interacting with people. And I think that I was definitely aware to a point that something wasn't right. But I think it wasn't until I was old enough to sort of recognize the way that he was treating my sister and I in particular, that I sort of recognized that, like, this isn't how like a parent is supposed to treat children. I think also because he'd been in our lives for so long, it wasn't really the same as like my mum's boyfriend. You know, it was it, he, given that he'd been there since we were 5 and 2, and had obviously been with us for 14 years by the time it ended, it was sort of, surely we should have some sort of like family dynamic, family relationship. And it never ever felt that way. It was never like a family dynamic. And it was, I think it wasn't until sort of I was at an age where I was kind of aware of the way that my friends interacted with their parents, and even my friends who also had stepdads, how they interacted with their stepdads and things like that. Like, and until I was sort of at an age where I was processing what life was like at home versus how I felt at friends' houses, and sort of being too embarrassed to bring friends home because I knew that it was just not right. The atmosphere was completely off. Everything was wrong. And like, I used to sometimes not like coming home from school because it felt like walking in through the door, and just the atmosphere was different. And even like if he was at work, for example, like the house just felt different when he was and wasn't there at all times. I think that was even when I was really little. Like, you could just feel the difference when he was there versus when he wasn't. And
That's interesting that you say that because my daughter, she's learning how to drive, and she keeps telling me, I don't want to drive with dad. I don't want to drive with dad, right? For multiple reasons, because of how he tries to teach her and like the way he acts and his anxiety and stuff about it. And she's only wanted to drive with me. But she says something very similar as what you said. She said, him being present in the car with me, there is an energy, there is a vibe that I literally cannot stand. She's like, I don't like it. I don't even want to be in the car with him. Like, she goes down to her room when she's at his house so she can avoid him, right? Because it's the same thing as what you're saying. Does that sound familiar to you?
I mean, even when I was learning to drive, like, I bought my first car myself, and I used to only like driving with my mum because if I went out driving with him, like, I would end up crying, like, for some reason, like, every time I went driving with him. Like, it was just I don't even know what it was, because it was just sort of, I think, being in that one-on-one kind of situation with him, because that was very rare. Because so my mum was kind of always there, because he was never really bothered about spending time with me and my sister. And it was sort of only once I'd started driving when I was 17 that he suddenly, well, not even, I don't know, it just, that was kind of the first experience I'd had sort of one-on-one. And I used to kind of the same kind of thing where I didn't like being in the car with him, and I would always end up having to pull over and cry for some reason. And I don't know what it is. It's just an energy that
You're
just, like, because I was never a bad driver. You know, my mum was never
You never
cross
came
with
close to
me.
crying.
Like, I never cried in the car with my mum. But it was just something off. So I get that. I completely get that.
Well, and you had said too, which is really interesting to me, something I experienced personally was when you're in it, right? When you're in that environment, even as a young girl that you were for 14 years, like he really was a big part of your life for what you knew as far as what family was and a parental figure. But it wasn't until you got out of that little bubble, right? It wasn't until you got to your friends' houses and seeing other people and how they react and how they talk to their kids and how they interact with their families that you were actually able to start to see, oh, wait, right? Because you're so immersed in all of that. And what it feels like is like your eyes are opened. It's like, oh my gosh, like maybe this isn't supposed to be like this. So I know it's difficult for you to describe, but were there any sort of indicators Because I know, like my daughter says too, just like the way he acts and his, and she does have some specific things that she can tell me, but were there any things or any times that you can recall or that you remember knowing, just like, there's something wrong here. Like, I know this isn't okay.
I think one thing that sticks out in my mind is my first sort of, like, in hindsight, I think is the first time that I was aware that he was, I guess, abusing me and my sister as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, at the time, I didn't see it that way, but in hindsight, I know that that's what was going on. But it was a situation where it was just the two of us at home. And I think my mum was maybe out for work. My sister wasn't at home. She was at school or something. I don't know. But it was just the two of us at home. And I remember it sounds really stupid to say it, but basically we'd both had our dinner at the table together. And he had gone outside to smoke a cigarette after dinner, and I had put both of our plates in the dishwasher, right? And then later on, I think I'd done something to make him angry. I can't remember what, but I know that later on, when my mum had come home from work, he was telling her all about how I had done something to make him angry. And then he said about how he even had to clear up my plate for me after dinner. Like, I just walked away from the table and gone upstairs. And I knew that that wasn't what had happened, because I knew he'd gone outside, and I knew that I had put both of our plates away because he had just left his on the table. And I think that, and obviously then I was like, that's not what happened. I put your plate away. And obviously then he was arguing with me. He was saying that I was lying, was like saying to my mum that I was a liar, that I'd made it up and all this. And I think, obviously, in hindsight, I know that he was gaslighting me into and trying to convince me that I was misremembering and that he had cleared up after me. But I knew that that wasn't what had happened. And I think that was the first time in my life that anybody had ever done that to me. Mm. And even though, like I said, it feels silly to say because it's over such a small thing, like a dinner plate. But like, I think that was the first time in my head that it clicked, so that like, no one's ever spoken to me like this before. Yeah. And I knew that I wasn't wrong, because I remembered it, because I knew that at the time, I remember thinking that I could tell he was annoyed with me for some reason. And I was like, oh, maybe I could make it better by like clearing up the dinner table. And I know that I had a conscious decision to put his plate away as well as my own. And so it's sort of then where later on he was then accusing me of being a liar. I don't know. It was just the first time.
How old do you remember being then?
I think I was probably 14, 13 or 14, around that kind of age, definitely.
I'm so proud of you, though, for recognizing that that was, I mean, and even in hindsight now, you know that it's gaslighting. Probably at the time, you didn't even know what that term meant.
Yeah, definitely.
But basically, you know that he's lying, he's making something up for his own benefit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, to basically throw you under the bus to your mom,
yeah,
and get what he wants, right? Mm-hmm. To be right, to get her on his side or whatever. So that's really, really important. And, you know, I think we should teach people, right? I think we should teach kids at a young age, you know, to trust yourself, to trust your instincts, mm-hmm. to know, to be intentional, right? Because that's what you did back then. You were like, hold on, you actually traced your steps. Like, you were like, wait, he went out to smoke a cigarette, and I'm thinking maybe I can kind of smooth things over. So I'll put the plate, like, you walked yourself through that. And so you knew in the moment that he lied, that that was a lie, that he was trying to gaslight you. And of course, that's very common, right? That's very common for abusers to do. But the thing that I think probably upset him the most was that you didn't back down. You didn't question mm-hmm. yourself. You didn't say, oh, maybe I didn't do that. Maybe he did put that away. Maybe I did do that wrong, right? And that's what abusers lean on to gain control, right? So as soon as you make that little shift that, oh, and you start to question yourself, then it's game over, right? Because they're going to do it again and again and again and again. When they know you are not willing to back off on your stance and come to their side, they get really frustrated. They don't have the control anymore. So I'm just curious, like, after that happened, did you notice those kinds of things happening more or less?
I think, if anything, it kind of made me aware of just how he was in general. Because I think prior to that, because obviously prior to being that kind of age, I think I was quite isolated, in that sort of the only kind of family dynamics that I was consistently in was my own. And I feel like I wasn't aware until obviously seeing the comparison with other families and stuff. But I think that moment almost like enlightened me to like, no, that's not normal.
Absolutely.
And because I think there were little things like when we were younger, like I remember not long after we'd first met him, in fact, because it was before he was living with us. He used to, if me and my sister had been naughty or something, he would make us sit at the top of the stairs in his flat and would make us sit there for a certain amount of time. And if we made the tiniest noise, the timer would start again. Like neither of us could make a sound, like not even in just speaking, like we couldn't make a single sound and the timer would start again. And I think, and he always used to justify that as because he'd been in the military, he was just so used to like discipline in that kind of way. But sort of like I said to my mom earlier, actually, that I think there's a difference between raising a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old and being so used to a military dynamic, you know, because the 5-year-olds and 2-year-olds aren't in the military, you know, so it shouldn't really be comparable.
Exactly.
But yeah.
That's really, I mean, it's such a basic concept, right? But abusers like him really did that, like that kind of parenting to get your fear, right? To instill fear so that you would do exactly what he wants. And that goes across the board for every level, not just children, but adults too, right? They instill this fear in you, fear of, what they're going to say, how they're going to react. Are they going to gaslight you? Are they going to give you the silent treatment? Are they going to guilt you? Right. All of those things. So even that as a child, as a tiny little girl, you and your sister sitting on the stairs, you know, it's fear, right? Because what's going to happen here, right? Of course, the punishment is I don't want to sit here forever, but it's to gain control. It's not teaching you. What is it teaching you? It's not teaching a child anything to sit there. And especially like a 2-year-old or a 5-year-old, right? And does the punishment fit the crime, right? Like what did you even do to deserve to sit there for an unlimited amount of time, potentially? And little kids aren't designed to stay quiet for that amount of time.
Can I just say as well that in this, you know, I was there, which sounds atrocious, but he had, I guess, got to the point where I was made to feel that he had done me an enormous favor in taking on me and my children. So, you know, because he would do sort of grand gestures of gifts and like he bought quite expensive clothes and things like, you know, I was made to feel that whenever I was never comfortable with him disciplining the children. They were 5 and 2, for goodness sake. We're talking misdemeanors. I don't know what it even would have been, but you know, whenever I was sort of trying to interject, he would sort of like, you either want me to be a parent or you don't. And it was like, well, you know, and it was always a source of conflict. I was never comfortable with it. And again, with hindsight, I so badly wish I could change this, and I can't. You know, it's happened. And but I, you know, the fact that I was present during that, I remember this, you know, but he had manipulated me so badly, and I witnessed it, you know, I was there, but I was so entrenched in this relationship and him and what would have the consequences if I didn't let him parent in his way.
Right.
Would be too big to, because he would always threaten your separation or whatever. And I had the, you know, I'd already had a marriage under my belt that had broken down. There was the pride element. I can't screw this up. You know, this is, well, he's a good man.
Yeah. And he created, you know, that sort of indebtedness. Like, you are indebted to me because I did this for you.
Definitely.
Instead of it being a gift of love, right? That I want to, because I love these girls and I love you and I want to be there to help, right? It's like, you owe me. Right. You're indebted to me because look at what I sacrificed for you guys. Right. And that's typical. That's typical. I do think that what you said, you know, because I understand that there's feelings of regret and guilt and things, I'm sure, as a mom, because I have that too, because I see that impact it's had on my kids. But I also have to believe that it's just as possible that that circumstance and those situations have set your girls up in such a wonderful way to avoid this kind of thing in the future, right? Because she's on a date one day and the guy's like, oh, you didn't order that last time we were out. You ordered this. And she's like, no, I remember, blah, blah, blah. Right? She's not going to put up with it because she knows.
We're laughing because this is something that we joke about, that I think that for all the awfulness that we've been through, honestly, our BSometers, as we are off the charts with sensitivity when we detect something now, and their tolerance for they're so good at having a voice now, and I think you said fairly recently that this has raised our awareness that these people exist. I think when you come at life from a place of truthfulness and honesty, you assume, I assumed other people do too, and they don't. And that's really shocking. And they walk among us. And like my ex is a paramedic, he's a medical professional. He should be the most trusted. He's got access to everybody, and the reality is so very different. And yeah, it is interesting that they kind of would they seem to recognize things way sooner than I do.
So I'm curious, for you, the daughter, have you kind of immersed yourself in learning about that kind of thing? And I mean, because you threw out the term gaslighting, so I assume you have some education and things like that. Like, did you go down that road to try to understand it, to learn it? Have you learned it from mom? Was it a combination? Like, how do you feel like you've kind of gained your, education and insight on this?
I think most of what I know now about narcissism and abuse in that kind of situation has been since he and my mum separated. Because, like I said before, at the time, all of his bizarre behavior that was just completely not normal for anybody, I always had kind of justified to myself, like, oh, well, it's because of his upbringing, like, it's because he had a horrible life, like, he doesn't know how to interact with people in a normal way. And I think that I didn't know at the time that that was what was going on. Like, I don't know. I don't think I'd ever even, obviously I knew what a narcissist was, but in more of like a, not in the kind of the way that I know it now. And I think most of the learning that I've done has been since he's not been in our lives anymore, and almost kind of like making sense of the last 14 years of everything, and
And you
sort
can
of
make the
it
connection.
explains everything. Like, he ticks all the boxes that there are to tick, and it just makes everything make sense learning now and being able to look back with hindsight. So I definitely know a lot now, more than I did before. And I think maybe even because of him, even before he and my mum separated, I've always been quite good at getting the measure of people. And I think I pick up on, like, I don't know, I think I pick up on a lot of traits like that before other people do. And I don't know whether it's because I've always had a kind of heightened awareness of that kind of thing because of him. But I think that if anything, it's almost kind of made me even more sensitive to picking up on other people having similar traits to him. And yeah,
That's
superpower.
great because one, the ability, right, to trust your instincts, like a lot of people just shove that aside or push it away or like maybe they get manipulated or coerced to think differently. But the fact that you trust your instincts is so important, and the fact that you have sort of self-educated yourself, learning things and understanding it. What do these things mean, and being able to connect the dots to what you've experienced, right? Because hindsight is the thing we all of us survivors say, like, oh my gosh, looking back now, that was gaslighting. Oh, looking back now, that was word salad. That was circular conversations. That was the silent treatment, right? We can see a lot of times when we're in it, it's like we're in the middle, in the eye of a hurricane, right? It's calm. It, or the eye of a tornado. It's calm in there. There's nothing. You can't. There's just swirling around. You don't know the destruction that's going on, right? You can't actually feel it. You might have little alarms that go off in your head, and that's what you are experiencing. Like those. Okay, hold on. This isn't right. Or I don't know that this is okay. And you're able to trust that. So those two things are really important, right? Awareness is so key. And I love the fact that you're so young still, like 20. Like when I was 19, I met my ex. We were dating at the point where you're at right now, and I was married at 21, and I ended up in that relationship for 20 years, experiencing all the stuff that we're talking about. Had I known what you know, I mean, my life, I wouldn't even be here today, but my life would be completely different. So because this podcast is all about healing from emotional abuse, have you done any sort of healing? Both mom and daughter, I'd like to know the healings that you have done, healing your relationship with your children, releasing guilt, regret, like any of those things. Like, what have you guys been doing to try to get through this? Because it's difficult.
I haven't had therapy per se yet. Both the children have, and I will. I'll get there. You know, we are 12 months since we escaped. We literally left when he was at work one day, and we moved and have gone with no contact. I'm lucky that I have a really good circle of friends who are only happy for us. The number of people, he'd made my world very small. I worked at home since before everybody was with coronavirus, but so I lived at home, I worked at home. He'd isolated me from a lot of my friends. He'd caused ruptures with my family. So my world was tiny. And then about 4 years ago, when the children were a little bit older, I think you were at work and my younger daughter was out with her friends, and I started to think about I could be doing something for myself, and I joined a field hockey club, and 4 years on I captained one of the teams, and it was, I always say that was the start of the end of my relationship. I wasn't aware of that at that point, but that was when I started to make friendships, and I was quite good, and people liked me, and I was doing something and getting my confidence back. And he would always tell me I was selfish, and I was just useless across the board, really, that I couldn't really do anything. And eventually it got to the point where his was the sole voice amongst all these voices of positivity. His was the one negative voice. And that's when I started to speak with friends more about things, because I actually find this really embarrassing. You know, it's I'm from a nice family. I'm a decent person, you know, and I present a certain way. And to think that this has gone on, I did find it embarrassing. Now I know it happened to me and he was a manipulator. And I think, you know, I know now for a fact that other women have also been taken in by him. It's not just me. But it makes your world small in that sense, because I find that I wasn't being truthful and honest with anybody, really, because, you know, my parents live 500 miles away. So when they would call my dad got the measure of mom's instantly. My mum also, her spidey senses tingled enormously as well, when they just worked out that this guy is not, you know, he's not right. His grandiose, you know, his ego, everything. It was just all the classic things. But I've been very lucky that I've been able to open up. I've decided to live my life sort of truthfully now, you know, and not hide anything anymore. If I had questioned the truth more with him and drilled down on there was so many gaps in his timeline and his story and of his life. And I now know for a fact that 90% of the stuff this guy said just wasn't true. And that's crazy. 14 years of my life, and none of it's been real. You know, we were supposed to be moving to, you know, another country next year. We had so many plans and none of it was ever going to happen. All this future faking stuff. And it's been I always felt I didn't want to show vulnerability. I'm not very good at accepting help, but to pull off a move while he was at work, I needed help. I mean, planning was my thing. But fortunately, I had a really amazing team of friends around me who absolutely held me up and supported me and the children. And I've been lucky that I've been able to sort of get to a point where I can show vulnerability. And I was always scared to do that, because when your life is spiraling, you kind of hang on to the things that you can control. And the thing I could control was my outward appearance. So to everybody else, I was confident and I was, you know, but the reality was, like, as she said earlier, if we saw his car in the driveway when we got home, it was like, oh, you know, he was like a thermostat on the house, you know, it changed the temperature completely. But by showing vulnerability, I've found that only good things have come from that, which is the opposite of what I thought would happen. I thought people's perception would be that I was, you know, complaining and weak and blah, blah, blah. But actually, it makes you more human and more accessible and relatable. Because if you've got this sparkly life, is it really real? And no, all you had to do was just lightly chip away at the surface and you would see how unraveled everything had become for me. But people have only been kind, inconsistently kind. I haven't known that for such a long time. And I told my mom and dad the truth, you know, about everything. And it's so sad because they were so close to giving up because I had made it such I would completely sided with him. And fortunately, they wouldn't give up. They wouldn't let us go. So, you know, they would never be able to stay with us when they came to visit. And he never came with us when we went back. So this Megan's talking about, my daughter's talking about us, a lack of family. And that's kind of, we never did the usual family experience of all four of us going to visit. But I find in the last 12 months, see, long walks and talks with some really amazing friends have helped me process things. I have read, I mean, your book was one that oh my goodness, I know it's out on Audible now and I'm listening to it again, but I read your book and it was I couldn't put it down. It was and I know our experiences are slightly different, but there was so much relatable content. And see, to have my experiences validated, it was so helpful. And it just kind of made me realize, because when we were talking about growing up in an abusive household, I didn't recognize it as abuse until about 18 months ago. So we didn't know it was abuse. We knew everything was off. Yep. You shouldn't have to record the conversations with the guy you love, should you? I see that's not normal, apparently. You know, so we always knew things were off kilter. It wasn't right, but couldn't put your finger on it. And it was only when I'd actually separated, we had to stay in the same house for 6 months because of tenancy agreements and things. But when I was speaking to Women's Aid, one of the charities here that helps support women in abusive relationships, and I'd been referred by my doctor, and I was like, but that's for abuse victims. And I didn't see myself as an abuse victim. Abuse to me was black eyes and broken bones. And I didn't recognize that psychological abuse is I mean, it's to your core. It's so damaging. And so that's why I think we've never recognized it as abuse.
That was my experience too.
Yeah, and it's almost like I didn't feel I fitted into that bracket, because I didn't feel I had nothing to show for it. Although I will say there were times during our relationship where I just wish he'd hit me. And I know that sounds like a dreadful thing to say, but I just thought, if I have something visible, I can look in the mirror at myself and go, you need to get out of this, or other people would see it, you know? And
that's the dilemma, isn't it? Because we don't actually know it's abuse because it flies under the radar. It's something that we are not, people don't tell you this stuff, right? I mean, that is one of the reasons that I wrote my book, because I wanted people to know this is abuse, right? This is something people experience all the time and have no idea, because their husband or their boyfriend never laid a hand on them, right? But it goes so much deeper than that. And I love that you mentioned that having a support system is key, and having self-care, doing things for yourself, like how you said about the hockey. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I wasn't expecting you to say, though, was the showing the vulnerability and how much that actually was helpful, where it feels like a lot of times people who are healing, and I think this is across the board, put up these defense walls, right? You put up defense walls because you're afraid to get hurt again. You're afraid to trust again, you know, but what you're saying is different. You're saying, show this vulnerability, right? Tell my truth, be open with people. That's what vulnerable means, right? And that actually helps you heal more. So I love that you shared that, because that's something that not a lot of people really recognize is important. So let's switch over to you, because I would love to hear a little bit about what you've done or what you even want to do. How are things going for you as far as healing from this and moving forward?
So I was already in therapy at the time where my mum and him separated. And I then finished therapy the same month that I moved to university, which was 2 months before we moved out of the same household as him, but like a few months post separation, if that makes sense. And so I've, in terms of talking about it in therapy, there's sort of quite a small window of processing I've done in that sense. But I think that because I had already been in therapy, I almost had room in my brain to process it as it was all going on, and sort of to be able to sort of take in all this new information on what we've actually been through in the last, like, over a decade, you know? And I think I still feel I've definitely got a long way to go, because I have, because obviously, like my mum said earlier, he still lives in the same area as us, and I do see him like sort of once every few weeks. I don't know if he's seen me, but it'll be sort of like me and my boyfriend will drive past him while he's out for a run, things like that. And it still completely will set me off and throw off my entire day. And all it takes is to see him in passing for a couple of seconds. And for some reason I've got this like huge fear that he's going to find out where my mum lives, or and I think obviously because we know that he works in a medical field, like I have this kind of unshakable worry that he's going to come and kill us or something, and because he knows how, you know. And even though I know that reasonably it won't happen, but I think that I still, in terms of that, I still have this kind of worry that he's just going to show up
Right.
and he's going to find out where we are and
Well,
stuff like that. And yeah.
and those are the leftovers from trauma, right? That is triggers that you have. You might see something out, or a car that looks like his, or anything like that can cause that. But what's interesting to me about what you said is that you recognize the sort of conscious part of your brain versus the subconscious fear. And I'm not sure if you knew this. I think your mom knows that I am a healing coach. Like, I help people heal their subconscious minds. And that's really what this is about on this podcast too. But it's really interesting to me that you recognize, look, I have this fear. It's a reasonable fear, right? Because he has the capabilities to physically harm you or your mom or your sister or whoever. But then there's also part of you that's like, okay, well, maybe that's actually just my fears showing up. Maybe this is me being hypervigilant. This is just my brain's way of keeping me protected. And so the way that I would help someone process that is we'd get to what are you thinking about? What are you believing is happening in your mind? And so, therapy is amazing because it sounds like that it's sort of opened the door for you to start exploring those things in your brain. But it's really amazing to me that even at such a young age that you can kind of differentiate between, okay, this is a fear of mine, I understand, but I also have this conscious part of my brain that goes, but maybe that's actually not true. Maybe there's something else here that I haven't thought of. And that's the exact type of thing I do with my clients when I work with them, because we release that stuff so that when you see that car go by next time, you don't have that panic. It doesn't ruin your day. It doesn't cause you to feel like something horrible is going to happen. You can still reasonably protect yourself. You can still have that situational awareness to be safe, right? But a lot of the things that are happening are just going on in your head. So I love the fact that you're so young and you've done a bit of therapy, but that you are so, I don't even know what the word, your mom tried to explain this to me about how well-versed her daughters were, but and she was right. But the fact that you are so like beyond your years, really, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So that's amazing. And I'm really glad that you're able to see this, see the past, be in the present, and then look to the future to see, you know what, maybe there are more things that I can do. A lot of times, I mean, when we're healing from this kind of thing, there's different stages of healing, right? We've got denial, we've got the knowledge stage where we're like learning about everything and trying to like, oh my gosh, connect the dots to the past and the present. We've got anger, we've got sadness and depression, and then we eventually reach the acceptance stage. And acceptance isn't actually like what a lot of people think it is, like, oh, I accept that he hurt me, or that he this, or that he, I accept the abuse. No, that's not what acceptance is. Acceptance is that reality is reality and we can't change it. Goes back to what you said, right? This already happened in the past. I can't change what happened. I can only say, what can I learn from it? Is there something that benefited me? Is there something that I can do going forward that's different? To look at it. And I love the fact that both of you have such a amazing outlook and perspective. And that's what I was hearing when you were talking, Mom, because that outlook will take you so far. I mean, even though you've been out for 18 months, just having that outlook is the catalyst for healing, because neither one of you sound like you're in victim mode at all, like at all. And a lot of times people get stuck there because they can't see any other way out. And so it's really important to recognize what's going on inside of us so that we can move forward and heal. So, is there any advice I want two pieces of advice. I want one from mom and I want one from daughter. And you can go first, mom. A piece of advice you would give to someone who is in an emotionally abusive relationship, who recognizes they're in an emotionally abusive relationship, who has children who are being affected. Like, is there anything that you would advise?
I think I would say channel your inner mama bear. It was the realization I came to once I knew that the children were thinking the way they were about him. And I knew, because I in my head, I was still thinking we're breaking up a I would be breaking up a family if I was to leave him. But once I knew the children, I mean, adult children or grown up children, but, you know, once I knew the children were feeling as they were about him, that was it. We're doing it then. And it was literally that night. It was okay. Next opportunity I get to when he starts the conversation about we should separate, as he was like, okay, we're doing it, you know. So I think about your kids. You know, I know that my younger daughter has experienced in her therapy sessions that she's had a situation where her therapist has suggested to her that, but this happened to your mum. And wow, you know, and she gets that a lot, that from colleagues and things at her job, that saying, but this happened to your mum, when they see her reaction to having seen my ex around, you know. And it's just not true. It's affecting your children as well. And as awful, as horrible as that feels, because obviously as their mother, I massively regret that I brought him into our lives, if you like. But I do whatever I can to now support them out the other side of it, you know. But don't think that this isn't affecting your children as well as you do to hide things. You said a few weeks ago that we were talking about some things and she had said, gosh, I can see now that you hid a lot from us. And I think that you know, that was all, that's great, because that was my intention. But I obviously wasn't, you can't hide everything. And clearly it does affect your children. So
whether you think it is or not, you're trying to protect
them. Even if you think
them.
You're doing a great job, you really just think of your children and make decisions based through their eyes of what they're experiencing. I've always felt, you know, I'm not just raising little girls here, I'm raising women. Mm-hmm. And who are, you know, fortunately both my girls are in really lovely relationships with really lovely guys. And, you know, but I've always been mindful that they're going to have to go out and they're not always going to be under, you know, I as they get older, they kind of have their own lives. And you just want to set them up with resilience and the ability to sort of have an awareness of that not everybody is good. And, you know, I think that's something that I just think how your kids are seeing it. Even if they're not verbalizing it, they will feel the atmosphere in the home. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any hiding that. It's an energy, and you can't hide that.
Thank you for that. And what about you?
I think that speaking from what I wish I'd done, mm-hmm. is that if you can speak to your mom about it, like if you don't feel like everything's right, say something. If you can. Because obviously it's not always going to be safe to or the right situation to. But I think that obviously from hearing about how much that my mum kept out of you from us, I think I wish that we'd felt that we were in a position to be able to say to her that we also didn't feel comfortable with him. We didn't like living with him, that we felt a different atmosphere in the house, all this kind of stuff. Because I think that we always... I mean, I don't know if my sister feels the same, but I definitely feel that I'd always kind of assumed that, well, she must be happy because we're still here after all this time. So I never wanted to be the person to make my mum unhappy by telling her, this man that you've been with for the last several years isn't good for us as a family. Because what if she didn't feel that way? But I think that regardless of whether or not you think that your mum feels the same way, I think it's always going to be worth at least voicing your opinion on it, just on the off chance that she feels the same. Yeah. And it could give her that little push to realize.
Yeah, there could be some fear there, right? Just depending on, like you said, maybe it's not safe to do that. Maybe you're afraid your mom will go back to the boyfriend or the husband and tell them like, oh, she's unhappy. And then what's going to happen? Are you going to get backlash for that? Is she going to get backlash from that? Is the abuse going to escalate? So having these close relationships with their kids to where they feel safe communicating their fears, communicating their concerns, telling us what they see. You know, I think a lot of times parents, honestly, I'm going to own this. You probably will too. We don't give kids enough credit. We don't give them enough credit. Like, kids see stuff. I mean, they know what the hell is going on, right? And a lot of times we're just like, oh, they're kids, or oh, they're just got their phone and their iPad on, and you know, they're fine, you know, they're just doing their thing with their friends. They see everything. And this was a huge factor for me. And I know you've read my book, but it was a huge factor for me in my decision making, because I thought what you did, like, I'm raising adults here. I have a son and I have two daughters. And I'm like, if I stay here, they're going to think that this kind of treatment is okay. They're going to think that they can treat women or men like this. They can think that they can be treated like this, right? Whichever way they decide to go. And I was just not okay with that. I thought, you know what? It's going to hurt them deeply that I have to divorce their dad. However, I looked at the flip side and thought, I'm going to be giving them 50%, because we split 50-50. I'm going to be giving them 50% of their time that's in a healthy environment, that's with a parent that's not abusive, that's with a parent, right? Was before, when I was still with them, 100% of the time they would be getting that and they'd be seeing all the other things. Now I feel like I've given them the opportunity to see me in my new relationship, how that works, the dynamics there, how there's not abuse and how you treat people. And now they're out of the bubble like you were, right? They can see the difference and the contrast of what's going on in their other family with their dad and what's going on over here. And I love that, because, you know, we don't give kids enough credit, I think, a lot of times. And I think as a parent, we have to recognize that when it's not just about us, like you said, it's affecting the whole family, right? It was affecting the whole family, because even if you are, like how that therapist said, well, your mom was the one that was abused, right? But the reality is, if your mom's being abused, that's trickling down to the kids. For me, I would snap at my kids. I would yell at my kids. I would be super critical of things they were doing. Hurry up. We got to get this stuff done before dad gets home, blah, blah, blah. Right? Like, I would be acting like that, treating the kids differently because of the abuse I was getting, and maybe teetering on abuse myself towards them because I didn't know how else to be as a parent. Does that sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've often said that the few times that we since the split, we don't argue. We just don't. They don't give me any cause to criticize them or chastise them or anything. But I mean, you can tell the story.
I was saying to my mom earlier that I think that most of the time, or even all of the time, if she was angry with me or my sister, or was shouting at me or my sister, it was usually because if she didn't, then he would be making her life hell. Because it would sort of be situations where it would be something that he was mad at one of us for and would make her also be mad at us.
Yes.
Even if it wasn't a thing at all. So it sort of felt, obviously, from our end that we were being told off or shouted at for stupid things. Mm-hmm. But really, it was because if she didn't have a go at us, then the repercussions probably would have been worse, you know?
Exactly.
Because he would say, you know, do you want to deal with this or shall I? Right. I wouldn't even know half the time what he was referring to, because it would be some, and I know now it probably was nothing, but he would make me have to go in and go, guys, come on. And I didn't really even know what I was, which is crazy. I didn't even know what I was telling them off for half the time.
But it's what you said. It affects the whole family, right? It's not just one person. Like, if you're just in a relationship with one person and that person's being abused, even that ripple effect, right? It goes out, like, even if you don't have children, it goes all the way out to extended family. Like, it was affecting your parents, you know, it was affecting your friendships, affects everything. So especially when it comes to our kids, because they are the most important things, right? We have to protect them. Recognizing that everybody's affected by this, not just you, is so, so important. So I'm so thankful that you brought that up. Okay. So I'd like to just wrap this up. I always like to kind of end it on a happy note, or kind of a fun note. So I'd love for each of you to share something with me and our audience, something that, I mean, obviously they know your very intimate story now, but they don't know you personally, but tell me something most people or not a lot of people know about you that you could share.
Do you want to go first?
You go.
So my little fun fact about myself is that I have 20 tattoos and counting, which not many people know because they're all underneath my clothes. So
20. Wow. I mean, you're only 20 years old. When did you start?
yeah.
Yeah.
But she does it very cleverly. She always gets things that have deep meaning to me. And I'm like, oh. And so I can't be. She's very wise when it comes to. I think I've seen mine's tattoo related as well, actually. I'm 47, and until a year ago, almost to the day, I had never felt compelled to have anything tattooed on my body. But I actually got a tattoo last December, and it says nothing but the truth. It's in script. And it was kind of like a note to self as a reminder to me to live truthfully and question and to not let this happen again. You know, I'm not in a position yet where I'm remotely interested in dating or anything like that. But I just, when that time comes, hopefully, you know, and I just kind of feel I'm trying to live truthfully, and it's so liberating. So
Wow.
people know that I've got a tattoo if they saw it. It's subtle, and but you know, they don't really know the meaning. And so that's something that not a lot of people know why I have that, and because they wouldn't know my
Right.
story.
It's personal to you. Well,
Yeah.
thank you so much for sharing. And thank you both for being here. I am so happy that you've been able to share your story and your vulnerability with us too, because, you know, this is, I know what it's like to tell your story. I know what it's like to go back and sort of relive some of that stuff. And it's not easy to do, but I am very impressed with both of you and how you're handling this and how you're moving forward and how you're educating yourselves and you're, you know, here helping, right? I don't know if you, I mean, we talked about the ripple effect, but this is the ripple effect too, right? Just you being here, someone listening to this today is going to go, okay. I need to do something about this, right? It's affecting the whole family. So, thank you so much for being here, and I will definitely connect with you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today. If you're a parent who struggles with guilt or regret from the past because of your personal toxic or narcissistic relationship, I want you to know that you can heal this for yourself and, in turn, show your children your strength and determination. So, if you'd like to work with me one-on-one on a deeper level with this, schedule a free call with me from the link in the show notes, and I'd be happy to discuss how I can support you to see if we can help you move forward. Thank you for being here with me today in the Emotional Abuse Recovery Podcast. I hope you found value here with me. If this podcast episode was helpful to you, I'd love for you to hit subscribe and leave me a review. My goal is to help you go from feeling stuck to set free. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook, and you can check out whentearsleavescars.com for more resources and information to help you with your own emotional abuse recovery. Until next time, here's to believing in